The next thing that we're going to talk about is the pre-release questionnaire. Now, previous to this this dictation, we talked about the reentry website. When we get into mentoring inmates and that, we'll have some statistics to share on how important it is that people get these resources, because there is a very high recidivism rate. But one of the things that we also began to do after I took a sabbatical in the year 2000 to just work on aftercare and reentry issues, or I should say reentry projects, we developed a pre-release questionnaire that we would send out to inmates. The result of our putting our San Diego directory online was that, online on the internet, was that we began to get requests from people all over the nation for help. They would say, great, you're in San Diego, you have all these resources, what about us? Well, because I'm a resource guy, I decided to see what we could gather up to put on our website concerning other places in the United States. So I began to research other national ministries, and I found two or three of them that were willing to share their information with me. Either they had some resources in the cities where they were ministering, or they were networked with other prison and jail ministries. And so I decided if they would share that information with me, that I would get some volunteers together wherever I could find them. I didn't know where they were coming from yet, and begin to enter in that information on our website. So I made contact with the directors of these other ministries, and I found out that they were willing to give me some of their databases, which I took, and I was able to find some volunteers, and we were able to put those resources on our database. And so it wasn't very long until we had a couple thousand prison and jail ministries nationally listed on our website. Well, of course, what began to happen was that people began to ask us for help, and inmates then began to write us because there were other ministries listing our website and stating that we would help inmates transition into society. So I had to develop a pre-release questionnaire. And so on this pre-release questionnaire, I would begin to ask inmates who would write us information that I needed to have to know how to place them. And so this questionnaire was, tried and proved again until we came up with the questionnaire that we use today. I believe the questions on this pre-release questionnaire are really important, and I want to go over some of the information because you may be working in that area and need this information and need to know what are the questions you need to ask an inmate so that you can help him transition properly in into society, back into society. And so obviously on our questionnaire, we ask them their name, their race is important, age, sex, institution, and booking number, their address, and their date of release. That's the basic information you need to get so that you can start out just to begin to get a picture of who they are and when they're going to be released. Data release is really important. Most of them are not getting out very soon, but some will be. And so you need to know that so that at least you can have know how much time that you have to work with this person. One of the questions we ask is, where do you stand with the Lord? And we are a Christian ministry, and so we ask them to give us a brief report on their current spiritual life to help us get a flavor or a perspective of where, what type of program that would best suit them. We ask the question, will you commit to a long-term recovery program, 9 to 12 months? It's important because a lot of programs will only take in inmates if they're there from 9 to 12 months. If they say no, we ask them, well, then how long? And that will also help us know what kind of program that they can go into or that would accept them. A 3-week program, 2-week program, 1-month program, 30, 60, 90-day type program. Then we ask them the questions. Check the answer that best fits the type of program and structure you think you need. And I have 4 choices here. I have 1 choice is Christian, very structured. I have Christian, lightly structured. I have non-Christian, very structured, and non-Christian, lightly structured. And that gives me an idea of, you know, who they are, what type of person they are, what kind of spiritual depth they have, and are they willing to go into another structured program. We have to remember that for some of these people, if they're in jail, they're in there less than a year. Maybe they've just been incarcerated for a few days or a few months. And the jails here in San Diego anyway will tend to let someone out of jail if they have a program to go into. However, the prison is different. Prisoners are normally incarcerated for a much longer time. And a lot of those folks don't want to go into a very structured place after they've been in prison for X amount of years. So these are good questions to ask so that you can find out what they really want and what's going to meet their needs. One thing is all this takes a lot of time. And, you know, the quicker we can find out the answers we need and to come to some conclusions, the better. So another question we ask is, do you have a geographic restriction as to where the residential program is located? Here in San Diego, or California, prisoners have to parole back into the county where they were sentenced and where the parole department knows them so that they can follow up with them and they have a history with them. So we need to find that out. Other prisons aren't that way, and you'll find that even though you would think that all prisons and jails are alike, they're very, very different, and they can vary from facility to facility, and so there's not a one-size-fit-all answer as far as how restricted their parole place is going to be. So you need to ask that question. So we ask them then what county and what state. And then we ask them, do you have to work immediately after you're released? And this is important because some want to work right away. And if they want to work right away, a lot of the 9 to 12 month programs will not accept them. The 9 to 12 month programs are generally the free programs. They're free, but there's a lot of people, Christian churches, who are donating to these programs, and they want generally the inmate, the ex-offender, to be there for usually anywhere up to 3 months without leaving so they can find out what they're really about, find out what they really need to know and what they need to work on, and hopefully get them ready to go back into society. The thing is that an inmate can't really learn. An inmate who is a career inmate, if you will. An inmate can't really learn what he needs to learn inside a prison or a jail. They need to learn how to use their freedom correctly. Most people who are incarcerated for long periods of time have never learned how to use this liberty of being free. And so therefore, a lot of these programs that take them in, they realize that. And they want them to be on their site, in their site, working with their counselors, their disciples, their mentors, so they can really work through the issues that get these people that have been incarcerated for long periods of time back in trouble again and again. So it's important to ask them, do they have to work immediately after release? And that will help you place them in the proper program. Some were successful before they went into prison and jail, and so therefore when they get out, they most likely have paid due for their crime, but they can go back out being successful, you know, back in the world, such as you could have a successful person who ran a business really well, but because they made so much money, they started partying, they started drinking or using coke or other drugs. They just began, because of their money, of their success in a legitimate business, they got themselves in trouble. They got themselves addicted. And so therefore, they go to jail or prison, and they really learn their lesson, and they get out, and they become successful again, and they've learned their lesson, and that's the end of that. And so those people can go to work right away. But many of these inmates who have a lifelong history of being in jail and incarcerated, they can't do that. They've never developed the life skills that they need to work a job very long or at all, or to have any decent relationships, and so or know how to have relationships that will cause them to be successful and have stable lives in the community. So those people, they need a long-term program. They need something that is going to be very structured. So we need to ask those questions. Number five, or another question in our pre-release, is, do you have any finances? You know, are they going to? What is the source of this income? Most programs require that you pay some room and board and costs, especially the ones that are going to be shorter programs. You know, 2 weeks, 15 days, 30, 60, 90-day programs. They want you to pay. The longer, again, the 9 to 12-month programs that are usually free because they have some resourcing somehow. So do you have any finances? If yes, what can you afford to pay a month for room and board? So we can know that when they get out, whether they're going to have money to put towards their housing. Another question, will you receive any gate money upon your release? If so, how much? This is really important to know if they'll have gate money. And gate money will vary. Gate money is money that the system gives to a person being released to help them make it back into society. Well, that money is very limited, and it differs from facility to facility. One place they might get $50. Another place they may get $200. And that money doesn't last very long. And so as we work with the inmates, we need to know, and as you work with inmates, I should say, you need to know, how much money are they getting? Can they get from the prison to the parole department to their place where they're going to stay on that amount of money? And that's going to really affect how you may want to help them. I can give you an example of a story of an inmate that I work with named Tom. And for you who are writing this book, I will give you that in a hard copy or in electronic form, and you can put that story in at this time. So now we're gonna go to another question, and that is, do you smoke? Some places will not allow, especially now more and more these days, they won't let you in if you smoke. And so the next question is, are you willing to give up smoking and accept it, into a recovery home? Excuse me. And that's important. Now, fortunately, at least in California, many of the facilities, the detention facilities, jail, prison facilities, there's no smoking allowed any longer. When I was chaplain in the San Diego Sheriff's Department, I heard that the mandate was coming that inmates could no longer smoke, I wonder what kind of outcome would happen. Would there be riots? Would people get hurt? What would happen? Interestingly enough, it worked out really well. The inmates were really happy that someone forced them to stop smoking. And after the initial, few days of doing that, with everyone at one time, as the days and weeks and months rolled by, the inmates coming in and that, they were really happy that that they were forced to quit smoking. Just recently in the California Department of Corrections, they have passed that same rule, if you will, that in the prison, the state prisons, people are going to begin to have to quit smoking. And the inmates, and that goes for the inmates as well as the employees. And you'll find that in state prisons that employees are really bound by a lot of the same rules for the that the inmates are. And so if there's no cigarettes for the inmates, there's no cigarettes to be on the grounds at all. And so with state prisons, unlike jails or in the metropolitan cities or whatever, in prisons, there's usually a lot of property reserved that the prison is on. And as soon as you drive onto that property, even before you get to the parking lots, which are usually could be, you know, a quarter of a mile away even, you can't have certain things on the property. So anyway, it's interesting that they can't smoke anymore. And so more and more, you need to know whether that inmate is smoking or not, so that in case there's a program he wants to go into that he can't get into because he's smoking, he needs to know that he can't smoke, and is he willing to quit smoking. Another question we're going to ask is do you have any disabilities? And if yes, we want them to explain what they are. And we want to know if they're in a wheelchair, or they're on crutches, those types of things, because, again, that's going to determine the type of facility that you can direct him to. Another question is, are you currently under medical care? And if yes, for what? That's a really important question to ask because, again, some transitional housing won't take people who are under medical care and under doctor-prescribed medication. So we do ask him, are you taking any prescribed medications? And if so, what are you taking? And so, again, a lot of transitional, if they're on some sort of psychic drugs or antidepressants and whatever, especially if they're a Christian program, they might not be able to get in. So we need to ask those questions. We ask the question, what are you arrested for? Some people say, well, you should never ask what somebody's arrested for in the ministry. Well, in this case, I think you should ask what they're arrested for. You're going to be putting them in with other people, and the directors of the ministries of the transitional houses, they need to know whether this person will be compatible or not with their program. And so we ask what they are arrested for, and we ask if they have any restraining orders on them. And if yes, against whom? This is a question you need to ask an inmate while you're working with them. And the reason why it's really important, because inmates are pretty smart in that when they have a restraining order against their girlfriend or their wife or a family member or whoever, they are pretty smart in asking, not telling you that they have restraining orders against them. And then with you and your zeal trying to help them, they'll ask you, can you just talk to my mom or my girlfriend, my wife, or my whatever, and tell them that, you know, I love them and I'm sorry for what I did. And when you go to do that, and in sincerity, you're going, gee, that's great. That's what they need to do. They need to repent. But as you do that, you are actually breaking the law because you are being a conduit for them to communicate to someone that there is a restraining order against. So you need to be careful about that. So you need to know that. Now, we ask the question, are you a registered sex offender? Are you going to be a registered sex offender when you're released? And, of course, in today's society, it's a really important question. Unfortunately, most programs will not take a registered sex offender. So there are very few that will. There are some. But usually if someone's going to be a registered sex offender, that's going to limit where they can go. We ask them the question, if they happen to know what their public defender or attorney is, most of the time in prison, they may not have that type of information. In jail, they would. But it's important because you can call that public defender or attorney and get a character reference for this person. We ask them, are you on probation? Are you on parole? If so, what is your PO's number, address, etc., so that you can contact them in case you need to. We ask the question, are you working with your chaplain concerning your reentry needs? Hopefully they are, but I think most of the time they are not. Unfortunately, there's a number of reasons for this. Most institutions don't have chaplains. They might have one paid chaplain if they're a state prison. A lot of the jails might have just a one coordinator chaplain. So jails and prisons are really limited in the volunteer help that they have to work with inmates. Maybe a chaplain is putting in 2 volunteer hours a week. And so an inmate doesn't have that immediate access to a chaplain, unfortunately. But we need to encourage them to get involved with a chaplain, so we ask them that question. But if there's not a chaplain, we go on to ask them whether they're working with their counselor. But we want to ask them what's the chaplain's name, address, and phone number. We go on to ask them, do they have a pastor, friend, a pastor, a parent, or a friend outside that we can contact for personal reference if needed, and what their relationship is to them, so that we, again, can get some personal references and be able to better serve them and be able to work with the directors. And then we basically get their information and have them send us that pre-release form. Those are the questions that we ask. We've learned over a period of time that those are important questions to ask, good information to get. So I hope that will help you as you work with people who are asking for help to transition back into society.